What kind of shape is our intelligence community in today?
Well, it's in horrible shape, and the reason that it is that it suffers, it has suffered for the past more than two decades from a huge vacuum of leadership.
And this then skews all political parties, right?
Well, it does, because look, you can only lead from the front, and with the exception of Bill Casey, I mean, you go back to Stansfield Turner, 1977. The CIA had just been through the Church Committee hearings in the Senate, and the Pike Committee hearings in the House, and the holding up of the poison darts and the guns and all that stuff. And Turner came in and immediately got rid of 800 of the most senior spies we had.
Why did he do that? Budget cuts or what?
Well, one of the reasons is that he was an admiral. And I think that he was constitutionally opposed to human intelligence. I mean, he was more of a technocrat. So he put a lot of money into satellites, and he put a lot of money into eavesdropping devices and stuff like that. And you know, I mean, we have now these satellites that can read a license plate from 22,000 miles, which is terrific if you're about to be attacked by a license plate.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do much good in knowing what's going on in Saddam Hussein's office.
Well, technologically speaking, we are way more advanced than everybody else, right?
Yes, we are, indeed.
See, but I'm a little concerned, and I'm going to jump around just for a little bit, John. I mean, because we talk about the kind of money that we've invested for missile technology to deliver warheads, nuclear warheads. And now we're concerned, because I've heard this before on this program with the number of guests that we've had, about suitcase nukes. Now, you don't need billions of dollars in rocket ships if you're going to somehow try to get this kind of thing into a country and then create all kinds of problems. So what good is having all this technology and expense when you could have some rogue nation scientist help some terrorist group come up with a suitcase nuke and they just waltz it into the country?
Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, in Washington, we always tend to fight the last war. And the last wars have been conventional. I mean, the first Gulf War was conventional. What we are not dealing with, what the CIA is not dealing with, and again, this is a subject I get to in direct action, is we are currently being faced with low-tech against our high-tech. An Israeli general once told me, the problem with you Americans is great is the enemy of good. You wait to perfect everything. And we, who are at war all the time, go with what we have. We go with the best that we have at the moment. And right now, we're facing an asymmetrical enemy. We're facing one asymmetrical enemy with Al-Qaeda. We are facing another asymmetrical enemy with the insurgency in Iraq. And we're still looking at those problems as if we were fighting in Vietnam, or we were fighting the first Gulf War, or we were fighting World War II.
I always wonder, too, John, and I'm going to be talking about this Thursday night with a special panel on 9/11, if also we're fighting the enemy from within.
I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, there is that. I think, for example, you look at, and some of these, when you talk about the enemy from within, this is not a conspiracy. It may sometimes be inexperience. For example, we have had a string of directors of Central Intelligence who either are unwilling to take risks or think they know more about the spy industry than mm-hmm. they do. And by putting these people in place, Stansfield Turner, Bill Webster, Robert Gates, Jim Woolsey, John Deutsch, George Tenet. What happens is that the leadership suffers. Therefore, down the chain of command, people see that they don't get promoted if they take risks. Therefore, they don't take risks. I mean, there was a sign in the Counterterrorism Center. One of my contacts at the agency told me about a year and a half ago. and it said Career Guidance 101, big ops, big risks, small ops, small risks, no ops, no risks.
How true. How true. I was having lunch today, John, and right next to me, and this was so cool, was Pierce Brosnan. James Bond was sitting there having lunch, and it was so ironic because on a night that I was going to talk with you about intelligence and spies and things like that, I'm looking at the play actor of James Bond, and I'm saying to myself, I wonder how Bond would have handled all this stuff today. And, you know, in the movies, you can do just about anything, but in real life, it just doesn't happen that way, does it?
That's correct. And, you know, I read a piece in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago about how prosecutors are having problems with juries these days because of the popularity of the TV show CSI. Juries having, members of the juries having watched this hit show believe that, you know, you should do forensics on everything and that forensics will answer the problem. Well, in the intelligence world, it's the same thing. I mean, people read these fantasy books about, you know, what Jack Ryan can do and what this hero can do and what that hero can do, and they actually believe that that is how the CIA operates. So you have all these incredibly high expectations of something that is, in reality, a very, very risky business. I mean, if you figure that at the height of the Cold War, we had no more than, a dozen, certainly less than two dozen, really good human sources within the Soviet Union. Most of those were given up, you know, by Aldrich Ames and Robert Hansen,